Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, what's happening?
Welcome to the Connor Wong Magic Hour.
You pretty excited?
I just saw his walk rate is 1.8%, so maybe not, but
that's not
better good than I thought.
Yeah. How are you doing today? You had a rough week last week. Did things doing better for you?
They are, yes, somewhat. It's not, this week has been much easier than last week, yes. Let's just put it that way. There's crushing expectations closing in on me, like the Star Wars trash compactor, but they shot that snake that was trying to drown me. So the snake is dead. I got to worry about the walls, but I have an escape hatch. I can get out.
All right. So you have to clarify something for me. I think I figured it out. The snake is a reference to Star Wars, or is there an actual snake that we're discussing?
Well, it's not.
I've only seen the original Star Wars movie.
Yeah, it's that one. They're in the trash compactor. I don't know if it's a snake, but something's trying to pull him down into the gross.
When you said they shot the snake, I was for a minute thinking they're like you had to call someone to exterminate a snake that was in your home. That was my first thought.
No,
you didn't bring up last week.
Day ain't over yet, Dan. Day ain't over yet.
I hate
you. Know sports. What else could happen? You know what else could happen soon here on the Monsters of Sox recording Thursday before the Thursday afternoon game? Is another pitcher could get hurt.
That's true.
It could just happen.
That is true. Down goes Brian Baio, although it seems mild. As is the case with Pavetta, as is the case with Garrett Whitlock. This is not the injury that I thought you were going to want to talk about first, though.
Oh, you want to talk about Casas first?
I mean, not to spoil it, I put together an anger scale that we'll get to eventually, and I was going to put something about the Casas injury on there. And frankly, I couldn't bring myself to do it. It felt tonally off because the anger scale is a little bit tongue in cheek. And I don't feel like being glib about the Casas injury. It really depressed the shit out of me. It really, really did. And I know he'll be back. Like, he's not gone for the year. This isn't a Tommy John situation. But he's going to be gone for at least 2 months, probably. Have you ever like cracked a rib? Or done anything to a rib?
Have I cracked a rib? No, I have not.
So 2 years ago, I did something to it. I never went to the doctor because I don't go to the doctor. Who does that these days? We have the internet. But
says
two
the
years
guy
ago,
whose ear has been ringing forever. who does that?
Yeah.
Why would I go?
Yeah, it's fine. You're not deaf. I was
what?
Rough. I was wrestling. I was wrestling with my kid and I absolutely just slammed my rib cage into like a half partition wall type thing. And right away I was like, oh, I just did something bad to that. I could feel it, but I just assumed I'm like, okay, I got a bruise of some kind. It'll go away in 3 or 4 days. I am not exaggerating to you at all. For at least the next 5 to 6 months, I couldn't really take a deep breath. I really, really couldn't. Like, it was that bad. And like I said, I eventually did look it up, and it seems like I don't know if I fractured it or, you know, I guess there's some talk about with the Costas injury, like it could be like a cartilage thing. But everything I read was just like, there's nothing you can do about this. You know, you just kind of have to rest and wait for it to heal on its own. And I did that. And basically for half a year of my life, like I didn't do a push-up. I didn't go for a run. I could, like, it hurt every time I coughed, every time I sneezed. It just hurt. Like if I had to turn my torso like this, it hurt. If I had to take a deep breath, it hurt. And eventually it went away, but it took like 5 to 6 months. It really, really did. And so with this Costas thing, like, you know, that's why they haven't given a timetable for that exact reason. They don't know how long this is going to take. And, you know, he's built like an ox. He's in better shape than I am. It seems like he takes care of his body much more than I do. So hopefully the recovery is not as bad for him. But like, even if the rib does heal by July, like, it was so hard for me to work out. I think he's probably going to be in the same spot. Like he's not going to be able to lift weights in his upper body. Cardio is going to be a challenge for him. So like, I'm just depressed as shit about it. This was, like I wrote on Over the Monster, even if this was looking like
the only
like
fun Red Sox site,
be the only fun Red Sox site, even if the year collectively for the Red Sox might not shape out to be anything special, which is what most people assume, although we've seen a lot of good things that we've been surprised by already. Like, even if that was going to happen, watching Costas turn into a star had me really excited. I was really excited for that. And even if he comes back, like, that's, you know, he's not making his first All-Star team this year. That's not happening. He's not hitting 30 home runs for the first time in his career. That's not happening. It just sucks. It sucks. I'm really depressed about it.
Well, Cutter Crawford's Cy Young season will make up for that. But
yeah, that's true. Until by the way, we get the tweet about him.
You want to know that if I'm doing better? I don't know the last day this was true. I both did push-ups and went for a run today. And it's 11 o'clock.
See, I'm back in both of those games now that my rib is healthy, but I don't do them on the same day. I do my push-ups and then the next day I do some cardio.
I did some push-ups and I was like, I'd rather go for a run.
Are you familiar with the 100 real quick push-up corner? Are you familiar with the 100 push-up program?
I mean, it sounds somewhat self-explanatory.
It is somewhat self-explanatory. It's just a website. It's 100pushups.com. And it just gives you if you want to do 100 pushups in a row, you know, you do it. You start by just doing as many as you can. And based on how many you can do, it says, okay, start with this. And you do, week one, day one, you do like 15, then 20, then 11, then 11, then as many as you can. And then you rest a day, and then day two. And it just like gives you an easy program to work your way up. I have done it 4 different times in my life. I have always dropped off before I made it to 100 because like I broke my rib or something like that, or just took a week off and then was too depressed by how much muscle mass I had lost in that week.
Do you remember the 500 laps of summer? See, same thing.
You made it.
It was easy when I was doing it. Well, I made it to 500. I changed it from 1,000 to 500.
Right, right.
I did do it. I used to, in college, my first 2+ years of college, I was like a workout freak, and I would do 200 push-ups before bed. And,
damn.
And then I started smoking weed. That was a better decision. Yeah, for a little bit. Yeah, I remember coming back from high school. I was sort of skinny when I left. Immediately started working out and bulking up, and then I came back, and a friend of mine was like, yo, you know, we're like 20, 21 year old. He's like, dude, you've got a light patch under your pec because it's so big, the sun doesn't reach it, you're getting swole. I was like, thanks, man. But that was the biggest I've ever been, and I don't want to be that big anymore.
Yeah,
I much prefer to be. Swimming, you're not small, but it's different. Right. Swimming, rock climbing.
Swimming, you're toned. You're toned. Yeah, those tone you.
Well, I'm not. Oh, yeah. but we're moving, we're going back in that direction. I have two brothers who are otherwise same height as me and same build, but they have less of the body that I do. And I don't mean that in a flattering way.
Who wants less of anything? More is better. That's what I say.
America, America, fuck yeah. I would like more Tristan Casas. It sucks because it was going to be, look, as much as, regardless of how many billions of dollars Andrew Belly deserves, the pitching staff appears to be, at this point, a collective success. Not that the individual performances aren't great, but it is very much a collective success. On offense, Casas was, I mean, Willier Abreu is knocking the absolute piss out of the ball.
Dude, I've been a big fan of his from day one.
He's, so his last year and this year, his batting average of balls in play is like 430. Now yeah, that's over 140 at bats. That'll come down. But all I care about are the splits, and he's a 3-4-5. Even if he's a 2.5-3-4 guy, that's great. I don't care.
Yeah, and he's the type of hitter, too, who even when the BABIP does go down, and it absolutely will, it's going to crater probably at some point this season. Like, his approach at the plate is so good, he's still going to get on base. He basically, Jake Wallinger pointed this out on Twitter, like, he's the same profile offensively as Masataka Yoshida, except he's a way better fielder, and he's faster, and he's way cheaper.
And he doesn't ground out to second every time.
Every single time.
I will say that Connor Wong also has a 430 batting average on balls in play, but his walk average, again, is 1.8%. Whereas Williers is consistently like 12 or 13. I don't know. It'll crater from 430, but I don't know.
Connor Wong did this last year. He had a hot stretch last year, and he had a multi-homer game, I think, last year, didn't he? It wasn't just last night. He had another multi-homer game last year, and he looked really good, and, you know, it looked like he maybe was the catcher of the future, and it all came crashing down. I'm not expecting Connor Wong's offensive production to do anything differently this year. I think his stat line will end up looking almost exactly as it did last year.
And then Kyle Teal swoops in, gets that one Rookie of the Year vote. But we get to further discussion. We're going to take a break. We're back with our newest segment. Dan, what's the segment? I don't know. It might not even be new.
Did we discuss it?
Guys, we don't have any show notes. This is not – we just go.
All right, I do have a new segment. It's called – I'm alternating – it's called Despair Out of Joy. I don't know. Does that make sense? I don't know. I was until we started talking about Tristan Casas again. I've been buzzing this morning. I don't know. I'll briefly steer this towards European soccer before I come back to baseball. My favorite soccer club, which is an absolutely garbage organization, Everton, which will in all likelihood, well, there's at least a 40% chance, I would say, that sometime over the next 12 to 24 months, they will go bankrupt. And it's, you know, it's one of the biggest, most historic clubs in England that is going down the shitter. They're not good on the field either. It's not just off the field. They're currently in 16th place of the 20 Premier League teams. They should actually be in 14th place, but the league took 8 points away from them for not having enough money. This is just like your bank does when your balance gets low and they say, oh, you don't have enough money in your account. We're fining you. That's pretty much what the Premier League did to Everton. You're not making enough money, so we're taking points away from you. So they should be in 14th, but they're in 16th. But nonetheless, last night, they gave me genuinely one of the most memorable, thrilling sports fan experiences of my life. And this is the third year in a row that this has happened to me, despite the fact that they have been garbage for 3 years in a row. So last night, they've been fighting relegation. They've been on the, for 3 years in a row, they've been on the cusp of getting kicked out of the Premier League. Last night, they won a game where they were massive underdogs that not only effectively secured their place in the Premier League, but they were playing their hated crosstown rivals who were going for the league championship and who they have not beaten at home in 14 years. And they beat them 2-0, and in doing so, knocked them out of the title race. It was just thrilling. And, you know, like I said, this is now 3 years in a row where they have not finished above 15th place. And yet all 3 years have given me one of these games where I am legitimately, sincerely saying it was as just about as thrilling as any championship I've ever witnessed as a fan. And that's because, right, of the system of promotion and relegation that European teams have. And I was thinking about this morning as I was walking back here, and this is a tired take, so I don't want to get on it too long. It's a tired take, and it's one before I got in soccer I used to see all the time and roll my eyes at. But I got to get it off my chest because I was thinking about it my whole walk here. The promotion and relegation system is so much more entertaining as a fan than what we do in America on so many levels. And it just pisses me off that we can't have it here only because it frankly doesn't matter what's the most entertaining system of sports. That doesn't matter because all of the decisions about how our sports are organized in America are simply driven by what makes 30 men the most money. And it just, I mean, to think that, like I said, that for so many teams, for so many fans right now, there's no reason to watch baseball already. If you're a fan of the Oakland A's, if you're a fan of the, you know, Marlins, if you're a fan of the White Sox, like, you're already don't need to watch baseball. Like, you're, it's done. It's done for you. And that doesn't happen in European soccer. If you're a fan of the Oakland A's right now in European soccer, this is actually all right. This is shaping up to be one of the most intense seasons of your life because you're hanging on to your major league future.
That's, and the other thing, that's not true, because they would have been relegated a long time ago.
Well, that's true. You're right. Well, but maybe not, because the owner would have been forced to invest, because they're not allowed to just be okay with being shitty. They're not allowed to do that in this system. And then the other thing it would do, and this almost makes me more mad than the fact that we lose excitement at the bottom of the standings, it would, in order to implement a system of promotion and relegation, you would have to free the minor leagues, right? That would necessitate it. And that's why baseball is the only American sport where it actually could work, because the infrastructure is already there. There already are hundreds of smaller, independently owned teams that have their own stadiums. And baseball could free the minor leagues, you know, because, like, look, you look at every minor league farm system, there's seven teams, including the Dominican academies, seven teams. And really, only like 50 of those players on those seven teams are important in any way. And I don't even just mean like 50, like it's not 50 that are going to make it. It's less than 50, but there's 50 that are even like, well, there's 50 guys that have like a 10% chance or more of making it. The rest of them are just filler. We don't need seven teams. So we easily could free up the minor leagues. And then all of a sudden you have all of these teams in AAA, these teams in Nashville, in Portland, in San Antonio, these teams in big cities, in wealthy cities that could support a major league team. Now they actually get the chance to have a real team that actually competes, that actually means something. And I think I told this story in the pod before, but the Cubs were the last team to have a farm system. That's the real reason why it took the Cubs 108 years to win the World Series. There's always a reason that underlines the curse. And with the Cubs, it was because they were the last team to develop a farm system. And it wasn't because they were dumb. They recognized the advantage that the farm system gave them. It was that their owner, was Philip K. Wrigley, is that his name? Is that their owner, Wrigley, recognized that the farm system was going to destroy the minor league baseball ecosystem in America. Because before the farm system, you had leagues, independent leagues with teams that were sources of community pride that competed on the baseball field for actual championships, that had players who stayed in their community for, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years and became mini celebrities in their communities. They sold players to the major leagues. You know, you look at Ted Williams before he was a Red Sox was a San Diego Padre back when they were an independent team. And he was sold by the Padres to the Red Sox. Joe DiMaggio played for the San Francisco Seals. Like, the Pacific Coast League was an actual league. It wasn't as big as the American League and the National League, but it was an actual independent thing that had teams that were competing for something real. And my God, that would be so much more fun to have that back. If you were someone in Nashville, if you actually like had a team. And you know what it would do? Speaking of the A's, no team would ever move again. Because if you're the A's and you're intentionally tanking your entire season for 10 years in order to move, guess what? You don't have anywhere to go, because Las Vegas already has a team that maybe isn't in the major leagues, but is in the next rung down that is passionately supported by the people of Las Vegas that makes its own money. And they're not going to trade their support for the Las Vegas Aces or whatever they are for the Oakland A's. They're just not going to happen. So just like there is in every single way, it makes the fan experience better in every single way. And it's just not going to happen. And I just have so much despair about that.
I know. Like, this is not the first or second time we've talked about this. I will say that
really,
it's definitely not the first, and I don't think it's the second. But I obviously the American sports landscape is set up such that this would, it's just a foreign idea. And I think that it's not like soccer is not televised. Obviously it is, and it's very the most popular sport on television, but these systems came about before television.
Right.
America never had an issue with retrofitting its product specifically for television purposes and letting the television money dictate everything. That's how we are in the situation we're in right now. So where it could have worked in a theoretical situation, I just don't see it working now. I do, however, obviously agree that there needs to be, I think you're implicitly saying this, there needs to be some stakes to games instead of rewards. And not just to rewards in the sense of you're having municipalities have taxpayers foot the bill for billionaires. It's just so mind-boggling how backward that is.
At least they also get higher draft picks. Starting to turn.
They also get higher draft picks.
Yeah, and more revenue sharing.
If you want to fix, if you want to fix anything, swap the draft. Do it the other way.
Yeah.
Now that will never happen too, because we believe there's some sort of. The leagues have set it up where they believe that fairness for any given team is paramount in theory, but
the illusion of fairness,
because it's not fair to Oakland's fans in football or baseball or basketball. They lost all three of their teams to lose them. It's not, that's not fair. It's a, and it's particularly galling for baseball because as you've discussed, and as of true of soccer and to some degree F1, which is where I come in, because that's the side I come in on it. I got up at 3 a.m. to watch the Chinese Grand Prix on Saturday.
Really?
Even knowing who was going to win. No, that's the other
Lewis,
part.
Was it Lewis Everybody, Hamilton?
No.
Is he an F1 driver? Because I just.
Yes.
The only name.
He would have been the answer for 8 years, and now it's Max Verstappen. He always wins.
Got it. That name is going to happen. Yeah.
He's so much better than everyone else, and his car is better. And then there's different aspects. The funny thing about triangulating these three sports is that in F1, I think the teams almost all lose money. This is like purely a vanity project. But at the same time, I knew who was going to win. The most exciting thing that happened in this game, in that race, was Kevin Magnussen and Lance Stroll, who are not very good drivers, had this amazing lap where they were going past each other or right next to each other, and it's just amazing racing. And it was really exciting. I was watching it, and then I realized, like, they were in 18th and 19th out of 20th places at the time that that happened. And I was like, ah, this is amazing. And it's like, there, you know, there are just different standards for different events. But the problem with baseball is that there could be amazing baseball played in A's White Sox games, theoretically, right? But at least in soccer, people are around to see it. At least in F1, people are around to see it. You're still watching the professionals, but when there's nobody around to see it, who gives a shit? This is the main thing we learned about sports and COVID. Fans are the sport.
Oh my God. Yes. That's a really good point.
Fans are this. It's not the same. I also think that for that reason, all the sports leagues doing what they did in COVID, let's just take the COVID era concerns out of it and just talk about presenting it as an entertainment product. I think it's probably the hardest work any of them did their entire careers. That's what LeBron says. LeBron says, I won the two hardest. Now he's self-flagellating a little bit, but he's like,
yeah, of course.
I won the two hardest titles to win. I beat the Warriors team that had the best record ever, and I won in the bubble. And no one will understand how hard it was to play in the bubble.
Yeah, there's a logical fallacy there because he was playing against other people who were doing the same thing. But yeah, I agree. Like, personally, yes, I would not have enjoyed that experience.
I don't think he means specifically fan-related. I think he just means the whole, you know, it was not real society. It was,
right,
you know, sterile society. But think about how the A's going to play these games in front of nobody and the White Sox going to play these games in front of nobody. I know that's what you're saying. The amazing part about this is you didn't even say – you didn't say specifically, they beat Liverpool. They beat John Henry's team, which is the whole reason you're an Everton fan.
Yep. They beat John Henry's
team. They did the good thing.
They beat John Henry's team as one of the greatest coaches of the modern era is about to leave them and possibly put the club in a pretty precarious position. It's going to be real interesting to see, as Red Sox fans, what happens to Liverpool over the next 3 years. It's going to be real interesting to see. Because we know if the tables were turned, the tables have been turned, John Henry, American sports owner, would take the opportunity to rebuild. It's precisely what he did do with the Red Sox. He would use the departure of this all-time great coach and what is essentially an aging, you know, a championship caliber core that's kind of aging out right now. He would use that as an opportunity to pare back and go younger, try new things, be mediocre for a little bit and hopefully rebuild. That does not fly over there. It's not accepted by the fans. It's going to be, as Red Sox fans, this is actually going to be kind of fascinating to monitor over the next two seasons to see how FSG handles Liverpool.
Well, doesn't that explain a lot of what's happened with the Red Sox? He's got two of these assets, and one of them, the system is made to prop him up if he plays the game, and the other one is absolutely not.
Yeah. Yeah, but how now, willing is back- he going to be to – like, I don't like, I mean, everything, he's not going to be willing to go into the red for a few years with Liverpool, which soccer teams do frequently all the time. You know, if you do it too much, you get in real trouble like Everton, but it's not unusual at all for the Real Madrid's, the best clubs in the world, to go in the red for a season or two because they won't stop competing.
Wait, a season or two? I thought Real Madrid and Barcelona just lived in bed. Like, they just exists awash in debt.
Barcelona has for the last 6 or 7 years now. Real Madrid does not necessarily live in debt, but they're both certainly more comfortable with it than any American sports teams are.
I believe. Anyhow, you know, I just don't think we're going to have to worry about John Henry too much longer. I don't know what I mean by that, but he just seems to be withering away. He's just disappearing entirely.
Oh, boy.
He's just disappearing.
I don't know if you can say that.
Too late. It's been said. He's just, he doesn't.
You mean he's an absentee owner? That's what you mean.
Yes. I mean, that is what I mean, but why? Why is he an absentee owner? He's getting old and tired of this shit.
Yeah.
It's without getting political, there's a lot of talk now, just in general, because I'm not going to get political, about how older people.
Why not?
But everyone's going to. Anyone
who's listening to this knows the deal. They signed up.
Obviously,
for this.
Talking about the protests at Columbia. Which are
we do.
You see what I'm saying? I'm saying that people who have made it an avowed tentpole of their ideology that like protest is good and et cetera, on one side, and the people on the other side were like campus cultures run amok, you can't say anything. Both of them have just totally flipped sides to just say what they just say. It's like, yeah, you said that at the time. You said that now. Like, yeah, John Henry was a good owner when he was really active in doing it. And yes, he's the same person, but he's not doing the same thing at all. It's just, it's the whole culture of elitism peeing on us and telling it's raining. It's like I am specifically old as shit. I'm old enough to remember all this stuff being 180 degrees different. And this is where, and we talked about it last time, the Larry Lucchino, Sam Kennedy divide is where the Red Sox go from being sort of an activist organization to a propagandist organization. And I just feel like it's a propagandist organization at this point. However, it is one that is supported by the socialist structure of Major League Baseball, comrade. Quasi-socialist, obviously.
All right. Well, now that we got you riled up, should we find out what you're
Yeah, let's do it.
Or should we discuss a little? I suppose we should. I mean, we can discuss a little bit more about the Bayo injuries, about the Casas injuries. We could get into the
questions. They're hurt and it sucks. They're hurt and it sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, it does suck. It does suck. Brandon Belt just sitting out there, 136 OPS plus last year, left-handed hitter, just like Tristan Casas.
See somebody say if the Blue Jays cut Votto, I mean, I don't care what Votto does. I would love him on the Red Sox. I think I've said that before.
So
get them all.
Oh, that would be great too. So I'm guessing Votto's not been looking good so far this year. I haven't bothered.
He's still rehabbing.
Oh, he hasn't played in an actual
game.
He may just
be rehabbing. No, he hasn't.
Yeah, okay. So he hasn't made it up.
He might be,
Buffalo.
Quote, rehabbing. I don't know. Anyhow, I just want to, the one thing I want to say, I noted this in the group chat. I mean, you know what? I don't want to step on it because it might be in the anger scale. Go ahead.
Okay. All right.
I'll just say it now while you're laughing. Well, I'm going to say it now. The last two Wednesday games, the last two games have recapped, both shutouts. Both shutouts, Dan.
Both shutouts.
Continue to be good luck for the team.
You are. Do you want to take all the recaps? You want to take my Saturday night recaps? No.
I actually could do them Saturday night. They wouldn't be legible, but I could do them.
Yeah, that's my issue.
All right, let's start the scale.
All right. Since we're talking about ownership and since we've already talked about Yoshida, let's get on with it. One day, Brian, one day there will be a day when we will record a podcast without mentioning this name. Today is not that day. You did the recap for last night's game. You called it the Connor Wong game. But how angry are you about the fact that, as one of the astute commenters on your article noted, since he and Willie Abreu went a combined 8 for 9, it was really the Chaim Bloom game?
First of all, Willie Abreu didn't hit 2 home runs. Did you see in my? Did you see? Huh?
Yeah, I know. You said yes, yes, correct.
Right, and I noted because Tyler Milliken said Chaim Bloom must be smiling. Yeah, his guys went 8 for 9. The guy he traded is having literally the best start to a season in MLB history. So if he's smiling, it just shows he's a fucking doofus. I'm overstating it, but come on. I know. This is it's selective. Ridiculous. Yoshida is dead. Trevor Story is dead.
We did, and we went through this with Verdugo last April, too.
If you buy 20 lottery tickets, you're going to get $5 a couple times, you know?
We did this with Verdugo, and it looked like he had finally made the leap and was going to be an all-star. And everyone's like, Verdugo's out playing Mookie Betts. Look at this. And you know, we all know how that turned out.
I don't care. Here's the thing. They say that's like, people are going to tell me the war's over. That's lost cause mythology. That's ahistorical. Get the fuck out of my face.
Seriously.
10. 10.
10. 10. All right. All right. Well, let's get to something that's maybe a little happier, but also will get you riled up about Red Sox fans in general. Cam Boozer is with the team. Cam Boozer, for those who aren't familiar, is a delightful story. Because he just made his major league debut with the Red Sox last week at age 31. It took him this long to get here because he has had 6 major surgeries in his life. And all the way back in 2017, he quit and gave up on baseball altogether to go work at construction, installing ceiling tiles outside of Tacoma, Washington. That was 2017. He did that for 3 years before he started throwing again in 2020 and found that his arm felt good and that he was throwing as hard as he ever had, made his way back into organized baseball, and then 4 years after that, made it to the big leagues. Now, Cam Boozer is not the only relief pitcher in the Red Sox bullpen right now who had previously quit organized baseball to work a blue collar job. Chris Martin did the same thing. He worked at a refrigerator warehouse and had almost the same story where he was working in the warehouse on lunch breaks. He would throw with a friend of his. And one day he just realized, like, hey, I'm throwing it better than ever. So how angry are you about the fact that the Red Sox currently have 2 guys in the bullpen who once quit to work blue collar jobs only to work their way back to the major leagues? An unquestionably awesome story for both of them. And yet in both cases, when I tell this story online, whether it's in a tweet or an article, I'm met with a barrage of some variety of, I can't believe the Red Sox are dumpster diving again.
Well, I mean, but these results, they should just put somebody at every retail park in the country.
Seriously.
Just like, come. This is like, we're come try out. I thought it was, look, the Boozer story is awesome, no matter how you slice it. But the fact that his first strikeout is of Andrew McCutcheon, a guy's going to go to the Hall of Fame,
maybe. That was cool. That was
like,
cool,
that is it.
Something else about that outing, too.
He's not great.
No. Well, he throws heat. But something else about that outing too. Like, I also, like, you, his first pitch was fucking laced down the line too. Was it a triple or a double? I don't remember. It was definitely extra bases. Like, I love that aspect of it too. I love that, like, 31 years old, first time on a major league mound, first pitch, which is like a 98 mile an hour heater, pretty well located on the outside half of the plate. And it was still like, welcome to the majors, Mr. Boozer. And then, yes, for him to then come back and strike out Andrew McCutcheon a couple of batters later, I think just sort of I appreciated that inning, even though it was a little rocky from the Red Sox perspective.
Yeah. And I mean, the Chris Martin thing is, cool. He could do much worse things with that name than work in retail. I'm not going to expand on that. I've done.
Wasn't retail. Oh, he was in the back of the house. He was in the warehouse.
Oh, the warehouse. Okay. Still didn't start a band. Yeah. Negative 10 is awesome. Okay. I like it.
There you go.
Let's get more of this. Let's get an entire grocery store relief staff.
That would be great, wouldn't it? I mean, that would be the position where you could do it because
you know, to
make it to the big leaguers as a reliever, like if you can throw 95 and if you can develop a slider, like you'll get a shot.
Especially if you're a lefty, like Boozer. Boozer has it. You're a lefty and he throws in the high 90s. Get in.
Yeah.
This is my group chat that you're not in has been talking about the pitcher injuries. Yeah. And, you know, I don't want to put too much credence in the pitchers just want to throw. They don't want to pitch anymore. But I do at the same time think, maybe there's something to that. Maybe there's the fact that the guys who actually pitch and throw hard, guys like, I mean, Verlander did get hurt, but he's so old that, you know, that was sort of playing with fire. That how someone like him has maintained this production. Even a guy like DeGrom, who could definitely pitch. I mean, he was, when he was at his peak, was as, I mean, not as good as anybody I've seen since Pedro, but pretty close. And he's like Pedro, but 6 inches taller. Anyhow, even he was throwing hard. Yeah. So I don't know. But that's the point.
So Brandon McCarthy, who is definitely one of the best Twitter follows if you're a baseball fan. He has been railing.
One of the few baseball players like, oh, he's like us.
You know. Exactly. Yes. Yeah. You could have a conversation with him. He's been railing about Paul Skeens and the Pirates' treatment of Paul Skeens. Because, look, there are a lot of scouts and analysts who think Skeens doesn't need to be in the minor leagues at all. They think he's good enough to be in the big leagues right now. And not only is he not in the big leagues, but the Pirates like aren't letting him throw more than two innings right now.
I did. So I saw a tweet. I couldn't understand. It was from Brandon McCarthy. And it said, you know, Paul Skeens is going to start at 12:05. You're going to watch the best pitching you've ever seen for 15 minutes. And then you go on with your day. And I thought he was being genuine because watching Paul Skeens is pretty great.
Yeah.
But now I understand.
He's pissed about it, and he thinks, and you know, in his mind, and I don't think there's really any evidence to suggest this is wrong. This is like a case of collective delusion, because we don't have any evidence that what we've been doing with pitchers for the past 20 years in decreasing their workloads is working. If anything, we have evidence that it's doing the opposite. And you know, like if I actually thought the Strasburg arc was maybe going to be a kind of a turning point in this, because nobody was treated with kid gloves more than Steven Strasburg. Nobody was babied like he was. He, of course, famously was kept off the postseason roster, even though he was perfectly healthy because he'd reached his innings limit, and still his arm blew up. And this is Brandon McCarthy's point is like, there's no evidence at all that treating Paul Skeens like this is beneficial in any way, shape, or form. There's just none. We're just doing it.
It reminds me of Pavement. You would think that not driving on a road would be good for the pavement, whereas the fact that driving on it stops the grass from breaking through because you're pushing back down on it. I believe that's why.
I so both didn't that know that more. And thought you were going to talk about the band.
No. But point being that some things need to be used sort of like an engine too.
Yeah.
We're going to turn on this engine. We're going to step on the gas as hard as it'll go and it'll turn it off. It was only 10 minutes. So maybe the car just wants to ride at 80% for far longer. And
yeah.
You're much more likely to, and now obviously, now my personal life is blending through here. Yeah. You're slamming on the gas, slamming on the brakes, slamming the glass, slamming the brakes. that's a good way to fucking ruin a car, even if you don't drive it as many miles.
Yeah.
So I got the car and the road in the analogy.
If you remember Daisuke, who is maybe an imperfect messenger for this, because I think ultimately he was probably a poor fit for the major leagues. He had his moments with the Sox.
Until it was 3-2. Until it was three and two, he was never comfortable. Once it was 3-2, all right, let's do it.
Yeah, that's precisely my point. Like, he just didn't approach major league hitters the way he needed to be successful. But he, you know, after things really went off the rails for him, he blamed the way his arm was handled. He said, like, my muscles have atrophied in the major leagues, but because he was forced to cut down so much on his throwing. I don't know if that's true, but it certainly didn't keep him healthy.
Counts. It explains full counts. He's still trying to get loose the whole game.
Yeah. And there's another thing too. It's been mentioned a couple of times this year as we discuss the quote unquote rash of Tommy John surgeries that we discuss every year now. By far, the most UCL tears happen in the first 100 days of the calendar year. They happen from January, February, and March. That would lend credence to the idea that the problem is that pitchers stop throwing in October and then ramp it up, and maybe they're going too quickly. Maybe that's the issue, or maybe it's just that they shouldn't stop. But that stat, which has been borne out year after year after year now, that most UCLs are torn in the first 100 days of the year. Like, I don't know. When are we going to start looking at this and saying, like, what we're doing with arms isn't working at all? So let's do something different instead of just doubling down on the rest.
Well, it's performative the same way a lot of, say, national security is performative, and giving money to cops performative. If you look like you're protecting your asset, the only way to go is look like you're protecting it more. And so we've reached this point where it's actually probably not helping, but it looks like you're being careful when in fact you're not. And the NFL draft is tonight, and the only reason I mention that is part of what makes it such an interesting puzzle, same for MLB, but you can't trade the picks in MLB, so it's, you know, not the same, is which GMs, and in baseball, you're not expecting the player to play that year almost ever, right?
Right.
For the NFL, which GMs are just trying to keep their job? And for that reason, there's a lot of talk about the Patriots. By the time people listen to this, they'll know what happened. That maybe the Patriots shouldn't pick a quarterback, because once you do, you are on the clock. Before you do, you're like, well, we don't have a quarterback. You know, we're building up around it. Now, you don't have forever to go get one, but you certainly have more than a few months. So this is where it gets into what are you trying to do? You're trying to keep the job. And for me, if I were the general manager, if I was Ben Charrington, I want to keep the job. That's what I want to look like. I'm doing the right thing, and I want to keep the job. Mm-hmm. Because even if the Pirates end up winning the World Series, what are the chances he's there for it? I don't know. Anyhow, it is disappointing, because I think you could probably speak to this. So this makes me 9 mad. But what I would like you to do, because I think you have a greater head on it, is explain to the people how good Paul Skeens is.
I mean, he's outstanding. He's outstanding. He's like 6'10". He is dating Livy Dunn. Are you aware of that?
No, but I do know who that is.
Yes, they both went to LSU.
Rizzed up by Livy. That's how
rizzed
up.
Yes, that's how I first learned about her too. Baby Gronk was rizzed up by Livy Dunn. I had
that
never
dude
heard of
was
her before
so
that.
Sincere, and then tried to make it out like he was joking. It's like, no man, you were sincere.
No, I'm in.
Anyhow, he's the biggest. He's on the Strasburgian.
I mean,
path.
Yeah, but I think
please
most
learn the
people,
lesson. I mean, that's your point.
Right. Yeah, I think most people probably like Strasbourg was famously, you know, the most famous college pitcher of our life. I mean, I can't even think of anyone who came close to Strasbourg. But I think most scouts think Skeens is even better than Strasbourg was when he came out of San Diego State. I don't quite know why the hype isn't the same. Maybe I was living in D.C. when Strasbourg was drafted, so maybe I'm biased by that. I don't.
I think baseball is less popular, and it is Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
but
yeah, that might be part of it.
You know, Strasbourg was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, I think, when he was still at San Diego State.
Right.
I think.
Yeah, he definitely was. Yeah.
The cover of Sports Illustrated being a time capsule for what I'm talking about right here. Yes.
That does really make me sad that being on the covers of things doesn't mean anything anymore. I mean, we don't have to again talk about the despair of the total death of print media, but that was such a great
digital, believe me, I'm applying for jobs. It's hard to get across. Hey, I used to work at a newspaper, and people are like,
yeah. Oh, what?
You mean like a website? No, I don't.
Yeah. But even the broader, more dire societal implications of media collapsing, just that one little thing of being able to say this person was on the cover of X, whether it's Sports Illustrated or Time Magazine, as a shorthand way, like what is the contemporary equivalent of that? Of like, what would you say if you were trying to get across like how big somebody was today?
Well, see, but you would do it, but it wouldn't be based on a judgment. I mean, outside of like the cover of the New York Times, but I think you're talking sort of beyond that. It would be like what Taylor Swift did last week. Who has the most streams on Spotify in a day? And that's just popularity based because that's just numbers. But that's what I hear.
And that already exists. Like this, you know, the streams on Spotify is just a like for like replacement for the Billboard charts. You know, that's. I'm not sure there is like, yeah, that's true. I'm not sure there is like a like for like replacement for it's like, I don't know. That's who's the main character on Twitter today. Is that like the equivalent of who was on the cover of Time magazine?
But it's the opposite. It's like bad Time magazine.
Yeah. Evil Time.
Congrats, Shay, David, you're on the cover of Bad Time magazine.
I haven't checked into that guy in a couple of days. I'm not going to.
Yeah.
All right. So pitching injuries, you got a 9 for that one. That actually wasn't, I don't even know how we got on the topic. I hadn't written that down. I don't think I asked you to rate that, but
doesn't matter. Put it in the book.
Yeah, it's in the book.
It's been spoken.
That's good. Okay, two more then. Your boy Jaren Duran. You have been a big Duran supporter for years now. It has mostly paid off handsomely for you. Yeah, okay, well, you're going to take credit for this. Since April 6th, Jaren Duran is slashing .209, .280, .343 with only 2 stolen bases in 16 games. How angry are you about the fact that, as I predicted, BABIP don't lie, Jaren Duran is crashing back down to earth?
I'm nodding in Jackie Bradley Jr. Yeah, maybe. That's what I'm nodding in. Hell yeah. Let's get those hot streaks and those cold streaks. Jaren Duran he's not Jackie Bradley Jr., but he does do this. He does go on hot streaks and then he has cold streaks. He's not as good of a fielder as Jackie Bradley Jr. was. He's probably a better hitter at his best. I mean, not at his absolute best, because when Jackie was 100%, he was just, it was ridiculous. But that happened.
I mean, he made the All-Star team 1 year. I could see Jaren Duran putting
the defense had a huge part to do with it.
Yes,
I think the defense had a huge part to do with it. So, and I'm mad in my head, you know, and just a 2. I'm not furious.
Okay. So you think he's going to bounce back?
I don't think he's going to bounce all the way back, but I don't think he's this bad.
I don't think he's this bad either, but I am a little worried. I mean, look, he was outstanding for most of the year last year, and he looked outstanding again until April 6th this year. And I was ready to say, you know, we've discussed him a lot and I have always been waiting for him to come down to earth. And I was ready to say at the beginning of the season, okay, maybe he is this guy. Maybe he is now a core piece of the team. And now I feel like I'm right back.
Well, you thought it and he got cursed, because that's what happens when you have those thoughts. You said it for Nick Pivetta and look what happened. He hasn't pitched since.
Yeah. He's coming back though. He'll be back any day now. He'll be back any day now.
And that UCL is like, hey guys, be careful with me. I wouldn't want to snap.
I hate that it's true. I hate
it's
that.
True. It's true.
It's true of it's true of every goddamn pitcher in the league. It's so depressing. All right, last one. There's been some strong podcasts on the Monsters of Sox network this week. Red Seat dropped today. They have a really good discussion that gets into much more detail about the Red Sox than you and I did today. They had a good talk about Masataki Yoshida and how he's been totally buried in a weird way. Pot on Lansdowne, though, they had a special guest this week. I don't know if you listened to that. So they had Jared Carrabas, the king of Red Sox Twitter. Is he the king of baseball Twitter? Who do you think holds that title?
John Boy, I think, is a I don't partake in the John Boy, but they talk about him. You saw that Aaron Boone ejection, right?
Yes.
They said right before it happens, because we're not going to need a John Boy breakdown for that one. And then the whole thing popped off.
Yeah, so that's probably fair.
I would say that
they're close.
Carrabas has been at it for longer. That's for sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Now I know, I know Carrabas has transformed into a national figure, but since we come from the Red Sox ecosystem, I think it's probably hard for us to judge his stature outside of New England in a way that like we can see John Boy's stature.
I mean, I think he comes down on, he's been on MLB Network. He comes to New York. I mean, he looks like a TV guy. I mean,
he's good.
He looks like a baseball player.
Yeah.
He's good at whatever he's good at what he does. And it's awesome. And I'm glad that he took his skills to roasting Liam.
Yeah, so he came on Pot on Lansdowne to participate in an intervention to keep Liam from going to a Red Sox game, because Liam has now gone to 8 straight losses, including 5 shutouts in those 8 straight losses. The intervention failed, by the way. Liam is going to tonight's game. But my question to you, how angry you are the fact that Jared Carrabas has now been on Pot on Lansdowne twice, while you and I have only had a single guest who didn't even talk about the Red Sox with us in our entire run?
I was thinking about that. We don't need a guest. And as you said, I mean, we'll take a guest. And June is great. I'd talk to June any day. It's also
that was
great,
a great podcast. We didn't discuss the Red Sox at all.
But it was just fun. World Baseball Classic geeking out. Just the Shohei geek out hour.
Yeah.
But as you said, also, we don't talk about baseball. It's Friday. They've had a whole week of baseball.
Yeah.
They don't need as much baseball.
They don't.
That's what makes it perfect. What are we? We're like an affogato or like a port wine at the end of your meal.
Oh, I see I like that. A little glass of limoncello.
A little dessert, wine. Yeah. You know, that's
you've
what we
had
are.
The meal. You've
We've
had
been
the
through
meal.
All the you know, topics. Just... We can get back to them, but also, you know,
we don't need to.
This
yeah.
is the end. This is the, we're about to hang. We're about to hang out. So how mad am I that he's been on that? No, not mad at all. Negative 10. I'm happy 10. With the way we do things.
All right. Okay.
I know my brother was on here opportunistically.
Oh, that's true. No. We did have those two guests. So the premise of my question was wrong. So we had two guests.
He doesn't count. Nah, he doesn't count.
And I wasn't on there. So it
exactly.
Arguably.
We had the abortive Chad Finn attempt. But
yes.
With no service. I think that was... Nothing against Chad, but I think he was just like, oh, if I'm in a car with no service, then these guys are eventually going to be like, forget it. We don't want to talk to you.
And he was right. he was right.
Other way around. No, yeah. I am mad, right? Because I had negative 10, 10, 9, and 2. So I should have 11.
You had a negative 10 about Carrabas. You had a 2 about Jaron Duran. You had a negative 10 about about Cam Boozer and Chris Martin.
Oh,
you had a 10 about the Chaim Bloom game, and you had a 9 about pitching injuries. So these two 10s cancel each other out. So we're at 0. We're at 11 minus 10. You're at a 1 this week.
That sounds right. That's good.
So you're pretty much neutral. So to recap, you started the year at a 2. because you didn't care at all that Terry Francona wasn't at the 2004 ceremony. And yeah, you were at a 2 the first week. You were extremely mad last week. You were at a 32 last week.
I think I was well within my rights as a Red Sox fan and as a person.
Yeah. Yeah. You were mostly mad about ownership not showing up to Larry Lucchino's funeral and the fact that you never, as a mid 20s person, lived in a shitty one bedroom apartment within walking distance to Fenway Park.
And great friend of mine did just that. We went to games. He lived in a basement apartment on Peterborough.
Right there.
He used to see Mike Timlin walking back from the games because Mike Timlin lived right there. He says, I see him all the time walking past.
Yeah, that is great. All right, so you're at a 1, which brings you your anger count for the year, though, is at 29. Because you were so angry last week, you are at 29 for the year, even though 2 of the 3 weeks you were pretty chill about things, relatively chill.
Ooh, and I just saw 2 goldfinches. I might actually be happy now.
Look at you. You know the names of birds. I didn't know that about
yes,
you.
I do, baby. Yes, believe me, you're going to be 40 someday. The second you hit it, you're going to be like, is that a gross beak?
I already am kind of starting to notice that. What the hell? How does that happen? I don't care about birds.
I'll tell you, COVID sort of started to radicalize me because it was also, I was taking my kids to forest preserves everywhere around here. Mm-hmm. And there was nobody there and more birds because just there was a lot less activity. You could see them, you could hear them. And then one day we're walking back and this scarlet tanager, which is this little orange bird, but like beautiful, was just hopping in a stream as we walked past. And I got as close as I'm sitting with this computer to it. And I thought it must be hurt. I took a bunch of pictures and then I was like, guys, it must be hurt. And we reached out and it just flew away. It's like, no, it just didn't care. It just didn't care. After that, I was like, I'm in. Fuck it. I'm in.
You're into birds. I think that. So that's interesting that you mentioned that story with your kids, because that may also be a huge factor, too, because I can't believe we're talking about this. This is the second time I've talked about a bird today because one
now
of
you
my
just
sons,
need to do push-ups and go for a run and we're even.
One of my sons made a birdhouse. And he made it in like January, which is not birdhouse season. I don't know what you guys
I beg to differ completely.
Well, we hung it up in January and it's been empty for 4 months until today. Today there was a bird in there, and so like I had
not a bird feeder, a bird house.
Birdhouse, yes, birdhouse.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And I called the boys over, and I think you're right. Like if I didn't have kids, I wouldn't have a birdhouse at all. And B, if I saw a birdhouse, wouldn't feel the need to like enlighten anyone in my world that, oh, look, there's a bird. Hey, that thing you've seen millions of times in your life, there's one right there. But because I have kids, I have to turn everything into an enriching experience. So I have to
bird. You don't have to. You have to do shit. Raise yourself, kids. What I love about the bird feeder in the winter and birds in the winter is specifically I'm talking about cardinals, but the red cardinals in snow pictures are, you know,
that's a hell of a bird.
It's cheating. They look amazing. Before we get to recommendations, last year or 2 years ago, I was walking. I had a camera, like an actual camera that I was using at the time. It was a COVID era thing that I stopped doing. But I saw a female cardinal that was
they're the boring
obviously
one, right?
Had it. Well, yes, but she had a genetic mutation. She had a white head and a brown body.
Wow.
It was so cool. And I got pictures of it.
Whitehead cardinals. Yeah.
So interesting. Whitey Herzog. Rest in peace. I mean, I bet she's not alive either. So.
Yeah. Now they're,
right.
Together.
Now they're together. Recommendations? You got one?
I do a recommendation. I'm going to recommend a cocktail again. Last time I recommended a spring cocktail. I'm going to try and stay seasonal a little bit because it is spring, but you can still get a little bit sick this time of year, and there's nothing worse than getting sick when the weather turns. So I'm going to recommend my personal cold and sore throat and sneezing solution, which is a last word cocktail. And the traditional formula for the last word is lime juice, gin, green chartreuse, and maraschino. Again, as with the cocktail that I recommended last week, you can swap out the gin for mezcal if you want, which I love to do when I'm sick. And then it becomes a closing argument if you do that. There is an issue with chartreuse, which is that chartreuse, which has been made by a group of French monks for like 500 years. A couple of years ago, they decided they want to spend more time praying and less time making liquor. So they make way less of it. So chartreuse has become both really hard to find and insanely expensive. So that sucks. And there's no substitute yet for it on the market. But if you have, you know, if you've been able to get one, or if you still have one lying around, you've never known what to do with it, you know, make yourself a last word when you get a sore throat. And it's something about like that lime juice and the maraschino, the way it just like hits your throat. Boom. It just makes you instantly feel better.
I had to put on the mute button when I coughed during that. So maybe I need one.
You need go head down to the bar after this. Ask for get yourself a closing argument. Do the mezcal.
I have something more important to do than go to the bar after this, but we'll share that in good time. Okay. My recommendation is the other day I totally accidentally did a Boston movie double feature. I had no idea that either would be based in Boston. I wouldn't necessarily recommend the first one, but I had seen it on Prime Forever, and it's Ava, the Jessica Chastain as like a assassin movie.
Never it's heard of it.
Paint by numbers.
Yep.
Also, I have a bone to pick with you, and we'll get to that.
Okay.
It's paint by numbers, but Jessica Chastain looks really good in the movie. She plays an alcoholic, she's sober, assassin who goes back to Boston and deals with stuff in her life that involves killing a lot of people. Fun fact, on my honeymoon, the only 2 hours that I really spent away from my, you know, we took time, but like one time she's like, I'm going out. I was like, oh, I'm going to go walk around Rome. First of all, I walked around Vatican City, which is awesome. Like I've walked all the way around the country. And then I went down the main shopping street. I was like, that woman is really pale. And, Jessica Chastain. She was with her. Yeah, she's wearing like a big, like very movie star style, because she is incredibly pale and she's wearing a big hat.
So real quick.
So the movie's not, hold on. The movie's not great, but it does have John Malkovich in it, which I want to bring to your attention because you were telling me about Ripley and you couldn't remember John Malkovich's name?
Well.
Or was he not in the show yet?
He was not in the show. Have you watched Ripley yet?
No, I just seen clips that I've seen.
Okay. It. Yes. So I don't think this is a spoiler. He does not show up until the last episode. So I've now finished it. So he's not a big part of the show. And it's kind of a jump scare when he does show up. And if you want to watch it, and we can discuss this next week, I actually think I still loved it. I was let down by the last episode, only in comparison to the movie ending, I think is phenomenal. It's about
one of the best endings.
It really, really is. And the TV show,
I love that it was open and ended and they never did anything with it. I know they had talked about, but it's just great.
Yeah. The TV show ending, I think, isn't quite as good, not because it's bad, but because it's hard to be as good as that movie ending. And so John Malkovich does play a role in the ending, and I don't necessarily love what he's there for, but he's on screen for 2 minutes. So it's not, he's not
on the show.
Real quick though, before you get to the other show, I just want to follow up here, cause I am on the
other movie I'm going to recommend. Yeah.
Yes. So a quick control F on the Wikipedia page for Boston does not recover any hits. And it says locations. The film was shot in the province of Barcelona, Pentecosa in Huesca, La Chaux-de-Fonds, Switzerland, and Tenerife. So what are you talking about?
Wait, which movie?
Ava. Jessica's, yes.
She lives in Boston.
This is a different movie.
She's definitely in Boston. She's at the exact same spot where Leo goes, what do you want to do? Send me to the pool. This is the exact same spot.
Well, I am looking at I'm looking at a 2011 science fiction film directed by Kiki Maleo.
Daniel
Brühl, Marta Etura, Luis Homar, and Alberto Amann. Okay, never mind. Yes. Continue. So,
the one last sidetrack in this podcast that's full of them is that funny you say that Malkovich doesn't show up to the last episode. So I talked about the Pope shows. The second season of the Pope show, it was the
young,
new Pope.
The young Pope or the two Popes?
First is the young Pope.
Yeah.
And then is the new Pope.
Right.
Not to put anything, not to give anything away, Malkovich is the new Pope eventually in season two. Jude Law is really in 2.5 episodes of the new Pope, and you would never, ever, ever remember that. He dominates every, and one is a bottle episode where he's just in a hotel room. It's one of the greatest performances ever. But the movie I'm recommending was the second Boston movie that I did not realize took place in Boston, because the remake, which I've seen many times, takes place in New York, and that's the Thomas Crown Affair, the original.
Oh, you watched the original?
I had never seen it, and I was like, "Oh, this is going to be an old movie. How cool is it going to be?" It is cool as shit. Oh my god! And Faye Dunaway in that movie is—it's like there's a scene where they're playing chess, and it's so sensual. They actually spoof it in Austin Powers, I guess.
Yes, they
it's,
do.
I don't even think I've seen the Steve McQueen movie, which is really on me. But man, that movie was cool. It was awesome.
It does take place in Boston. I have seen it. I have discussed with you before about why I've discussed with you before about old movies generally sucking. This is a prime example of old movies kind of sucking. And it doesn't suck.
No.
I'm not saying it sucks. But the remake is much, much better.
The remake has a couple cool, really cool things about it. Like, incredible. The heist is amazing. The reveal infinitely is incredible.
Cooler. The locations are cooler.
Of course. But the older one. First of all, Faye Dunaway, I love Renee Russo, do not get me wrong, but Faye Dunaway in that movie cannot be stopped. Second of all, they do sort of the mod 60s thing where they have like different floating screens within where you're seeing different things happening, and it's not just straightforward, here's the movie. I'm not saying it's as good as the remake, but I don't think that reflects badly on it. I was very happy watching it, because also this is more what I thought the Ripley. I mean, it seems it's like a reverse Ripley. Whereas you're saying the TV, the newer thing was based more on sort of the exact character structure and then goes a different way with it. Whereas the Thomas Crown Affair is not. It's the only thing that's really the same is that there's like a sexy investigator type who's after him.
Yeah.
But it's in New York. It's, you see the heist with art. Whereas in the Thomas Crown Affair, the Boston one, it's all about the aftermath.
Right.
So the heist it's dumb. Way
like,
more.
They just like block a road and take money off a truck, right? In the original one.
Well, I mean,
one.
If it works, it's not dumb.
Yeah, fair enough.
I enjoyed it. So I don't care.
I'm disappointed. That chess scene is so dumb. I'm sorry. When you said that they spoofed it in Austin Powers, like, they didn't have to do anything to spoof it. They just shot it shot for shot. And they were like, isn't this stupid that Faye Dunaway is just putting an entire chess piece
Faye
in
Dunaway
her mouth?
And Steve McQueen are doing it. They're very attractive. You look at them, you're like,
literally
this
just
is,
take,
it is
takes
a little
the chess
bit
piece
on the
and
nose
just
with
sticks
the chess.
It in her mouth. Just
yeah, that's awesome.
In her mouth. No, it's
that's not, right.
That's one of my complaints when we talked about old movies in the past was their lack of nuance, and this is a perfect example.
What do you mean
that?
There's no nudity. There's no nudity. There's
nuance.
No like, look at
there's, nuance.
No. You just want the
she
boobies. And Renee Russo. God bless her for
her
God
mouth.
Bless her in the remake. She's out there without a shirt. We know. We respect the queen. We respect the queen. But I'm telling you.
Wow.
I'm telling you, it's the anticipation, man.
I'm glad you brought this up because I'm glad you brought this up because I, like we said, this is
I recommend drinking a few of your cocktails and watching Faye Dunaway and then fucking coming back to me. Maybe that was a bad choice of words. Returning to me. That would be a better way to say it. That's it for the Monsters of Socks. That is all we have. I'm going to go do something that isn't be mad about Dan, about my movie takes. God knows what pitcher will be hurt when we talk this time next week. But Dan, until then, stay take drunk. Care. I mean, you're drinking these spring cocktails.
Will. Take care. Nick Pavetta's UCL. Hang in there, buddy.